Welcome to Community Conversations, a monthly program on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson, and this evening we are talking about STEM education. You may have heard about the push for STEM learning in our schools. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. But why? Why the push for STEM education, especially for girls and young women? And what about the efforts to turn STEM learning into STEAM learning by adding an arts component? We've invited some guests into the studio to help us understand more. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Penny Morton. I'm the Associate Dean for the Swenson College of Science and Engineering, and by training, I'm a geologist.
And my name is Jim Reel. I'm the Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering. I've been here for 14 years, and I'm a chemist.
And my name is Cheryl Philby-Williams, and I serve on the External Advisory Board at the College of Science and Engineering at UMD, and also work as a senior hydrogeologist at an engineering firm in town.
Well, let's start by talking a little bit more in detail about STEM education. We understand the acronym now. It's science, technology, engineering, and math. What is STEM education?
The STEM is an acronym, of course, that you mentioned, Lisa, and it's just a way of talking about sort of a collection of topics that are often grouped together in one college. For example, in our college. I don't think that we're excluding things like political science and social sciences when we talk about STEM subjects in general. But it's the natural sciences, the biological sciences, and the engineering and technology kind of grouped together. And they, as I mentioned, they tend to be sort of at university in the same place.
At what age do you start to carve out STEM education, do you know, and try to encourage kids to take these classes?
I would think when they're born. I mean, the whole premise from STEM is math, numbers, dealing with numbers simply. Children should be doing that in preschool. And when they get into elementary school, they should be doing more math, just like they learn to read. And then further on, they introduce science topics, and we do that in our, if you have children in school, I remember my fourth graders doing rocks and minerals and going in and do science shows for them, and they certainly did all kinds of things through sixth grade, and certainly when you get up into high school, they take chemistry and physics and biology and math and lots of other things.
So when you start talking, though, about STEM education, in particular in grade schools, when you've got one teacher that's in charge of teaching all of the topics, are you adding another layer of complexity, another thing for a teacher to be concerned about?
Well, I don't consider myself an expert on elementary education, but I do know that what we're talking about is a holistic view of the world. I mean, when you talk about STEM, it can be incorporated into reading a book about it. It can be, you know, you're already doing math. It's just a way of viewing the world and making sure that you're pulling out these different aspects that sort of fall into the STEM world. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're adding more to the curriculum.
Yeah, I think that this is no different in some respects than our education was a few years ago. Certainly when I was in elementary school, it was in mathematics that led me to become a scientist in the beginning. And I think what's changed probably in those years is sort of the intentional inclusion of things like biology, things like earth sciences and topics like that, which didn't happen, you know, 50 years ago, but I think now, as Cheryl was saying, I think it gives the students the idea that it's everywhere. STEM is everywhere, and students should be thinking about the world in a more quantitative, scientific way that perhaps we didn't do many years ago.
When STEM education is talked about in the media, almost always it's tied to the idea that this is where the jobs are, and that the jobs are increasing. One study that I looked at said that wages are 26% higher than in non-STEM related fields, but they also talked about the graduate rates declining. Why is that, in your opinion?
When students come to college, sometimes a large number of them are underprepared in mathematics. As soon as they hit some of our harder math classes, they decide, oh, I don't want to do this. And that's one of the reasons. It's under preparation coming through the system. I think now we need a higher percentage of people doing STEM than we used to do. So I think there was always a natural inclination for certain people to do STEM. I think we need more people to do STEM now, and to take that group of people that aren't naturally inclined to do it and move them to the next step is hard.
A few years ago, I was at a seminar by someone from the Federal Department of Education about STEM and about encouraging students to pursue a STEM career at university. After the first year of high school, about one-fourth of all students in high school say they would like to study a STEM field at college or university. In the third and fourth years of high school, something happens to students, because at the end of high school, only 5% actually go on to study STEM at university. Nationally, of those 5% that want to pursue STEM field at university, one half of them change their mind after 1 year. I think it's really the poor quality of secondary school physics and math education. It just does not turn young people on to continue that field. It's too hard. They're not. They don't know how to do well in those courses, and they're just easier subjects to take. It really is something we need to change as a country. Now, those of us who are in the field, as Dr. Morton was saying, realize that, you know, although we try to impact secondary school science because we're closer to it as university professors, we're told by educators that really it's the fourth grade. Somehow we need to change elementary school to have students become more aware of the importance of STEM, the discipline that studying this field happens. And really, I think as university professors, we have little we can do in the fourth grade. There clearly has been lots of effort, particularly in engineering, and maybe Cheryl could talk to put engineering into elementary school and secondary school. That has not happened in the past. And a lot of this is just to set a tone for what the country needs, how to have a successful career. Those statistics you gave about employment are certainly true for our students. Our students right now have many job opportunities, including in the Duluth area, and there are many opportunities for engineers and scientists in Minnesota.
Before we go to Cheryl's comments, which I obviously want to get to, did the conference where you attended, and where you had heard that there was, like you say, somewhere in between the second and third year of high school, the students drop out, did they offer any explanation for why those STEM courses suddenly disappeared, or the students' interest in them suddenly went poof?
Well, I have a personal opinion about that, and I think that many of my colleagues would share that opinion. I think it's really the poor quality of secondary school physics and math education. It just does not turn young people on to continue that field. It's too hard. They're not. They don't know how to do well in those courses, and they're just easier subjects to take.
In my world, I see really that far downstream end where we are hiring engineers, and it's a war for talent. I mean, that's a phrase we use in our field a lot, because there are a lot more jobs than there are graduating students. And then when you are looking for the best of the best to hire, there's a lot of opportunities for people going into STEM right now. And we've been looking, you know, pretty far out at that. And those numbers are getting, that gap is getting wider as you look 10 years, 20 years down the road with the anticipated numbers. Getting females more interested in STEM areas is one way to boost those numbers if that population is underrepresented and it's whatever 52% of the entire population right now. I mean, that's an area where we can really increase our numbers of people coming out of college.
Cheryl, you've got a little boy. Are you already working with him kind of in an informal way to build his interest in these subjects?
Yes. Yeah. So I come at it from the perspective of having both a young girl and a young boy. My son is 5 and my daughter is almost 3. And we have been actively trying to encourage STEM because it's an interest of mine. We go out and look at my son Jasper calls it playing flood. We'll go play in the river and he'll build things up and let the water pour it out. Or we've been coming to the planetarium at UMD and watching movies. He's really interested in the solar system. And then his younger sister kind of comes along for the ride right now. But yeah, I mean, developing that interest does start really, really early. And we have been trying to actively encourage that because it's fun.
It seems that with kids, the original passion is there. But sometimes when you get down to the nitty-gritty of this is how I need to get a job in this field, I need to study these subjects and memorize these equations, that kind of casts a pall on it for students. How do you get around that?
Well, I would say you should not be memorizing those equations. You should be figuring out how they work and how to look them up. And that's the problem about students memorizing. They shouldn't be memorizing. I'm not saying there's not some things you have to memorize, but you should be able to work those around in your head so you don't have to memorize an equation.
I think your point, Lisa, is an interesting one for those of us who have been thinking about this for a long time. And we do spend some time with young people telling them, I mean, some people would tell them that science is fun and, you know, and easy. You know, we'll bring them on campus and we'll sometimes talk about the geology of the Earth on one morning, and in the afternoon we'll talk about cloning, you know, and that, as if this is all understandable and fun. But I think most of us who are scientists or engineers would say, you know, science isn't fun all the time, and it's not easy. But the reason we do it is because of the good feeling we get about mastering difficult subjects, you know, and working hard, and particularly in math, for example. There, you know, math is a pretty compartmentalized subject. You can do square roots, for example, and you can teach young people how to do square roots. And once you learn it, you know all there is to know about square roots. You've completely mastered the square root subject, and you can feel good about that part of your education. And I think that's something that we see, in unfortunately, with some university students, that they've never really been forced to work hard.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about the mental divide between the people who are the math people and the people who are the non-math people. And you'll get to guess where everyone in this room falls along that spectrum. You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. This evening, we're talking about STEM learning, science, technology, engineering, and math. Our guests in the studio, Dr. Penny Morton, Associate Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering, Dr. James Reel, who is the Dean of that college, and Cheryl Philby Williams. She is a senior hydrogeologist at Barr Engineering and a member of the college's external advisory board. When I was in school, the world divided itself fairly neatly into people who got math, people who didn't get math, and a couple of the real strange ones that got everything. Did we talk ourselves into that?
I think we did. I don't understand when people say they can't do math. I think it's either because the people that they learned differently than somebody else, they were compartmentalizing things differently than other people. I was reading an extremely interesting article, and I think it was in the New York Times, a study of autistic children. One group that were autistic spectrum, the other group were normal. They all had the same IQs. The autistic children scored so much better in math than the non-autistic children. And once they started speaking to the kids, they recognized that the autistic children did the math problems differently. For example, if you did a multiplication thing, the autistic children would add a zero and sort of estimate in their minds and then subtract where it needed to be, whereas the non-autistic were counting on their fingers. If we could figure out how kids' brains were wired and get to them, I think we'd have higher numbers.
Yeah, I guess I agree with the concept that perhaps we're wired differently in some respects, and maybe we, you know, so certain people have to maybe work harder at the concept of math and the concept of some topics. But I guess I do also think that it's a little bit a fault of society. And even your comments, you know, earlier, Lisa, about geeks, although you referred to geeks as actually the English geeks, not the math geeks, and I appreciate that comment you made there. I do think that in our culture, that this is the United States culture, that there is sort of a accepted sort of belief that, you know, that nerds and geeks, you know, are sort of strange people, and that it's not normal to be good at math for a young person. And I really think that is doing our country a disservice. And I would tell you that it's not worldwide. There are countries where being an engineer, being sort of a math, you know, a math science kind of person is actually quite respected and quite normal, you know, that we, that and looked up to and not sort of geeky at all. And, you know, I have various extreme ideas how to sort of try to change that culture among our school districts. You know, that really is a society problem that we need to fix, quite frankly, with better math teachers.
Yeah, I do really feel like in the same way that it's a disservice to sort of lump people as math people and everyone else, because it forces people to A, choose which category they're in, and B, it almost gives children an excuse to, if they're having a hard time with math, they can just say, well, I'm not a math person, and so it's okay that I don't get this, instead of saying, I just need to think about it in a different way or maybe try harder to be able to bridge that gap. But as much as we can change the lexicon to be divisive between those two areas, I think is really helpful as we move towards encouraging STEM education.
Let's talk about another political, in air quotes, division when it comes to STEM education, and that's the idea of girls and young women not going into STEM education. Where does that come from?
I should say, and I'd like to hear Cheryl and Penny's view on this, but, you know, this, again, is not universal in the world. I recently visited a university in Kazakhstan, and the entire computer engineering, computer science faculty were women, and the students were about 70% women. And it was considered to be perfectly normal. When I questioned, you know, my surprise, they were sort of, why would you be surprised? You know, I don't think it's universal. I should say that we do see that at UMD. You know, we have about 1/3 of our students in science engineering are women. And some disciplines like biology and chemistry are more than half female. But the engineering component is only about 10% female. So, and it's something that we struggle with. I think part of the issue is role models. I mean, I need more people like Cheryl and Penny out there to be role models to let young women know early in their thinking about what to be as a career that being a woman engineer is perfectly normal and perfect and a lot of fun.
It is a little bit self-perpetuating, and we need to get in there and actively change things, because when people are getting into college and they see these numbers of where males and females are, and then they see where professors are, and even some the statistics of where people are in their careers, it is harder for a female to picture themselves when what they see is males. So I think this idea of having good role models is really important. We talk about it even once you get into the career field, and I've done some reading that the largest predictor of success for a female once you get into your career in STEM is having a positive mentor and a role model as a female who is a female, and, you know, helping that person through their career. So it doesn't end at the educational level, but really throughout a career that females are mentoring younger females through school and through their careers.
What are the influences on girls and women before they get to college? What's working on girls that's pushing them away, perhaps, from these disciplines?
You know, you have two women in this studio who both, that never worked, so I'm not quite sure what pushes them away. I know in the 60s, when I went to college and I wanted to be a geologist, my counselor said, girls don't take geology. So my first year I didn't, and I switched the next year. Hopefully that doesn't happen anymore, but there might be some cues out there still, not such a verbal cue, but feelings. They don't see people doing that. They don't, you know, geology is a field-oriented, you spend a lot of time outside, and, you know, now and again, you have to go off to the woods to do your business. And I teach field camp, and women have a hard job with that. And is that because mom taught them that they aren't supposed to do that? I don't know. There's all kinds of cues that they didn't work on me. So I'm trying to figure out, and Shelby's nodding her head here. I don't know. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it can be really subtle. I mean, the messages that we give young girls, you know, as a mom of a young boy and a young girl, I try to be very, very conscious of how I'm treating both of them. And I've tried really hard to offer both sort of gender stereotypes to both of my kids. And but also, you know, as Penny was saying, just really encourage a love of the outdoors and an interest in
curiosity.
Yeah. I mean, we have our, you know, insect nets, and we go down to the river and, you know, look at the butterflies and the moths and the crayfish and talk about it and spend time outdoors camping. You know, and that's what I did as a kid. And maybe that is part of the reason that, I'm in this field today. I don't know exactly. It's if we knew the answer to that,
we'd have more of us.
Yes.
I've heard it said that young women hit a point where they discover that boys don't like smart girls and they dumb themselves down. And I'm thinking, do boys think girls don't like smart guys and they dumb themselves down? Or do guys just not care what girls think about their intellect? Or how come it only works that one way?
You know, there are subtle and not quite so subtle things that society does to sort of perpetuate this male-female difference. I mean, our society, again, the United States society, I'll focus on. You know, one example that I've come across recently is, you know, there's a very growing effort in a high school science project. It's called FIRST Robotic. We have this in Duluth at the DEC, and we had an amazing number of teams from all over the country come and compete in robotics. And they were in fact at least one all-girl team from some place, and I was very excited to see that. And they did actually very well. But too often, although the team will say we're half women, too often the women are doing all of the girls are doing all of the PR and the managing and the, you know, and I'm sort of disappointed in that a little bit, that I would like to see a team that was reversed, okay, that the girls are down there soldering and building the robot and the men are out raising money and doing publicity for the team. So I don't, you know, it's hard. Again, I think it's hard for the three of us, in particular Penny and I, at a university to think back on sort of the root cause of those choices that young girls make. And certainly Penny's daughter is a civil engineer. My two sons are engineers. So I, you know, we have little sort of perspective on that. But when you figure this out, Lisa, I hope you will let us know so we can fix it.
You're listening to Community Conversations on KUMD. This evening, we're talking about STEM learning, science, technology, engineering, and math. Our guests in the studio are Dr. Penny Morton, Associate Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering, and Dr. James Reel, the Dean of the College. Cheryl Philby Williams is a member of the college's External Advisory Board, and she is a senior hydrogeologist at Barr Engineering. So I went online and looked up STEM education to kind of fill in a lot of blanks in my own knowledge of the topic. And one of the first things I ran into was something called STEAM. The National Endowment for the Arts is excited about this idea. And that is adding arts, obviously, into STEM. So it would be science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Your reaction? Good idea? Bad idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I see the point of adding arts into the STEM acronym. I'm not sure the motivation for doing that. And I guess I'm going to say what Cheryl might say here is I don't like the assumption that STEM people are not in the arts, okay? You know, my two sons are musicians as well as being engineers. And
my daughter's an artist.
Yeah, so that separation I don't think is valid. I do think though that thinking of sort of the practical point where we are now, we certainly are in a situation where parents want their children to get jobs. And so when they're applying to university, they're applying more and more to STEM fields, less and less to the art fields or to the liberal arts fields. And I do think that the administrators, the deans in those areas are trying to sort of find a way to combine these disciplines. You know, graphic design is the most popular major in fine arts. And one can think of that's a very computer intensive discipline and it's probably the closest, I guess, major that we would say was a STEM-based major in the arts. Certainly there are lots of interesting programs in music technology. You know, we have a studio. We're building a motion graphics studio at UMD, as you probably know, and that is a very interesting facility because it's going to combine the dancers with the exercise science people with the mechanical engineers and in ways that we've not done here at UMD before. And so I think that, you know, the sort of the STEAM question is an interesting one. I don't think it probably really changes anything. I don't think just making the acronym is going to change anything.
The National Endowment for the Arts did a study, and it showed that kids in particular from lower socioeconomic backgrounds who actively took part in the arts scored better in science and writing, and they were more interested or more likely to go on to college. So especially the writing isn't really a surprise, but the science was sort of a surprise to me. Maybe that is one of those ways where you talk about a different way of teaching. That's maybe one of those ways to get to kids, perhaps, whose brains don't necessarily get it on the first pass through.
Well, you think of somebody learning to play an instrument. How do you learn to play an instrument? You practice, and you practice, and you practice, and you practice. How do you do a arithmetic problem? You practice, you practice, and you practice. And I'll have a little anecdote to take. Jim Allert, who teaches in computer science, he and I went to a meeting this summer, and so we were talking, and he said that in Rochester, Minnesota, when they opened up IBM, there were no music teachers in the schools because IBM recruited all the music teachers to come and work for IBM because they could work computers because they, through their musicians and their codes, he said, music's a code. That's what computer science is, a code. And for a while, they all went and worked for IBM. So there's a huge interplay between the arts and science, or math in particular.
Personally, yeah, I just think that these things, it's so destructive to think of these things in their compartments. I mean, really, it's just how you view the world. I was someone who was very active in science, but I also was a musician all through college. And there was I went to a liberal arts college, and there were a lot of STEM students that were also in the symphonic wind orchestra. And at that time, I had heard studies that, you know, the way that you think about music and you learn music, it's dividing up time and it's the rhythms. Mm-hmm. And it's just it's another way to sort of practice a different way of learning, as Penny said, and also the discipline, learning the discipline to get through something that's challenging. I think any way that we can, through sports, music, you know, different things that teach children discipline, and that some things don't come easily and you have to work hard for them. Really, it just builds that perseverance that is necessary to get through something that's difficult.
Community Conversations is a monthly program here on KUMD dedicated to topics of interest in our community and fostering our community connections. I'm your host, Lisa Johnson. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Penny Morton, Associate Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering, Dr. James Reel, Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering, and Cheryl Philby Williams, who's a member of their External Advisory Board and also a senior hydrogeologist at Barr Engineering. Community Conversations is produced by Lisa Johnson with help from Chris Harwood and funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.